This is the June 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net. He is in Barrington, Illinois. Let's begin by getting a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Naomi, I'll start with you. What's on your list?
Well, just wanting to get farmers to be ready for Monday's quarterly stocks report and planted acres report in case there's any surprises that come from that. So we just need to have some strategies ready going into that.
And Jim McCormick, what have you been watching and what's on your list?
Well, I think Naomi nailed it. The big thing we got to look at is this quarterly stocks and acreage number on Monday, but also we might want to talk about what happens after that. You've got a few days later, Todd, we got the holiday three-day weekend. We come out of that three-day weekend. Then we have the end of President Trump's 90-day pause of the tariffs that come due on July 9th. We'll see if we have any new trade deals done. And then, of course, a couple days later, we have the July WASDE report. So just a lot of data coming at us over the next 2 weeks.
I had forgotten about the 90-day pause. Well, I hadn't forgotten. I just hadn't realized it was quite that quick. I was thinking it was more like Aug 1, but July 9 is a date we'll have to talk about. Thank you for that quick update. I do, and Naomi, want to turn to you real quick as it's related to the markets today, and Jim, as well for this week. What's the possibility that we might be able to put in a spike low based on old crop movement, and it's just simply flushing the marketplace out for corn at this time?
Right. So looking at the July and September corn contracts, we are so close to that $4 value. So that's both technical and psychological support. And for Pete's sake, we're still looking at just historically significantly tight carryout at 1.3 billion bushels. So we'll see if we have any friendly news on the quarterly stocks report come Monday that might allow for a nice price recovery bounce. It'll also be first notice day for July grain. So sometimes that in and of itself can also add some price volatility and market movement. And then like Jim was saying, going into 4th of July week and weekend, now seasonally, traditionally, and I know seasonals haven't been working that great so far this spring, but usually there's some kind of a bounce during 4th of July week. And then that is oftentimes an opportunity to do some catch-up sales. So we'll see if that can present itself. And then at that time, see if the $4 value area holds for both the July and September corn contracts.
Now, Jim, I know your stablemate there in Barrington, Brian Split, does a lot of work on the charts. I suspect you talk to him pretty regularly. What's he been telling you?
What we're looking at, plain and simple, Todd, if you look at the continuous weekly corn chart, there was a gap that we left last fall, roughly between 395 and a quarter, and then we kind of backfilled it to roughly 399. That's when the September contract went off the board from being front month when it expired, and the December corn became the front month, and it left the gap due to the carry. So that is kind of maybe a technical objective to go down and fill. Like Naomi said, we're very close to it. So I could see us go down and fill it, and then we'll see what happens on this report. You know, it's been a very interesting situation. You got a carryout right now projected at 1365. A year ago this time, Todd, we were projecting the old crop carryout around 2 billion. Right now, we're projecting the new crop carryout at 1750. A year ago, it was closer to 2 billion. So the prices are really depressed. We've got this number coming out tomorrow on Monday on the stocks. And the fact of the matter is, the trade has absolutely zero clue of what their government's going to say. And what I mean by that is, 8 out of the last 11 years, the government's number came in over 100 million higher than what the trade was thinking, or 100 million lower. It's kind of equally divided, with the average being about 150 million bushels. So we have the opportunity for maybe a bullish surprise. The market has definitely washed a lot of people out. There's no doubt about it. Talking to our clients, unfortunately, there were farmers who were selling cash grain this week simply because they needed to generate cash flow at the end of the month and at the end of the quarter as well. So I think that was part of the weakness we saw this week.
So, Jim, I just want to make sure that I understand what the chart looks like and what you think or what the possibility is. So you're suggesting that in the best scenario case, you would fill the gap so that it's done sometime yet this week, meaning we'd have to still go lower tomorrow or before the report is released on Monday, and hopefully see a report that would be friendly to bullish to bounce this marketplace back up.
Yes, and you, Todd, you could actually see it during the report, because remember, you're actually getting two different reports. You're going to get the stocks report, and you're also going to get the acreage report. And the hard part about this is you could get one being a bullish report, one being a bearish report. You don't know which way the analogs, the, you know, computer systems are going to trade it. And we've seen one of these reports where the market will, the initial reaction may be down on a per se, maybe more corn acres than what the average trade guess says. And then the next instantaneous, the trade trades the stock number, which may be a little bit more bullish than what the trade is thinking. And then you may actually go down, fill the gap, and then close stronger. So you just don't know which number is going to take precedent and which number they may trade first, unfortunately. And you're kind of along for the ride.
Naomi, can you talk a little about these reports and what you at Total Farm Marketing have been thinking as it's related, and maybe start with the grain stocks and then move into the acreage report for me?
Yeah, so looking at grain stocks, you know, thinking that we're going to definitely see a tighter number on corn than year ago levels, which should be supported in and of itself. Not really looking for a lot of changes from a year ago in terms of that soybean number. But to Jim's point, the quarterly stocks report sometimes can be almost as much, if not more, of a market mover than the acreage report, because that's where the little surprise nuggets can be in the marketplace. So you really want to make sure we're looking at those numbers closely. And then when you look at the acreage information, traders have a tendency, and market has a tendency, that the soybean acreage number, sometimes what is released comes out to be just a little smaller than the trade estimate, and the corn number has a tendency to be a little higher. But I'm curious this year, because on the March report, we already had that bigger surprise announcement of 1 million more acres than what trade was anticipating at that time. And so now we're, of course, wondering, were there any last minute movement on acres? I think we're all definitely in agreement that the corn acres are much, much higher than the soybeans. That's not anything that's going to be in question. But is it just going to be small adjustments, or is there going to be any surprise bigger adjustment out there? So I think with this report, the bigger factor is going to be looking at the quarterly stocks, because that just sets the demand tone yet heading now into the next quarter.
Well, so it will set the tone, at least usually it's a 3-month tone, but this will set the tone until we get to the August USDA crop production report, likely, unless there's something in the WASDE, or, you know, as Jim, you suggested, there might be something on July 9th before the WASDE is released. Do you have anything to add, actually, on the acreage before we move to that July 9 date, and what the surprises that could come there might mean?
Well, I think on the acreage, I think it's going to be relative. I mean, the average trade guess is roughly 95.35 versus the March intentions, 95.326. So it's very limited. I think, you know, we're looking for a little bit more acres, plain and simple. We thought we probably lost some acres in southern Illinois and Indiana, potentially in the corn due to the wet spring. But northern Illinois, where I'm at, parts of Iowa, they got in pretty quick. And our contacts in the seed industry said they suggest that maybe we planted a few more acres. But like Naomi said, I think the surprise, if there's going to be one, it's going to be in the stocks. As for the trade deals, Todd, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the Trump administration has said they've got a lot of deals ready to announce. But if you look at kind of the rhetoric coming out of Twitter and some of the newspapers, what they're saying, they're still negotiating. Like just this afternoon, the U.S. had released its version of its con proposal to the EU. And Japan came back last night and said they were upset about a 25% tariff on all cars coming into the United States. And then the other problem we've got, Todd, with this is these are the reciprocal tariffs that President Trump's talking about. They could cut that deal, but a lot of these countries are very hesitant, because there's another process going on right now where, on a sidebar, the Trump presidency could come in here and say, on a separate deal besides the reciprocal, we're going to slap additional tariffs on steel or minerals or some other reason for an economic agenda. So we'll see if they can actually get a deal done and what that means when it's all said and done. I think if they do get deals, it's going to be a flurry at the last moment. And then we'll see where we're at. I mean, you know, my guess is when it's all said and done, they're going to try to nail everybody with a minimum of 10% tariff on everything coming in. If you look back 6 months ago on the in the Senate Budget Committee, they were actually budgeting for a 10% tariff on all goods coming across the, you know, a border, plain and simple, as a way to finance the tax cut. The question is it going to be 10% in my mind, or is it going to be 20 or 30%? And then how does that affect, you know, the overall growth of the economy?
There were other things that were happening in Washington, D.C., Naomi, over the last couple of weeks. We have talked about them, but there has been some time and they have settled out, at least in the marketplace, particularly the RVO or the renewable volumes. And I'm wondering what that means to the soybean market over the next, let's go 3-4 months, and then after January 1, because it feels like that's the division time. And does it make much of a difference in those first few months of the marketing year, that is? So once we get into the new crop marketing year.
Yeah, so the news, of course, was welcomed that we received a few weeks ago, and that's what provided the soybean market to have that lift higher. Now, in for nearby contracts and for the remainder of this year, there weren't a lot of dramatic revisions. It was very supportive, though, for demand for 2026 and 2027. And so we're going to see that on the January balance sheet. We should see strong demand for the biofuels on that January report. But between now and then, what that has done, it allows the administration to have some flexibility from the standpoint of they can say, hey, we have this new domestic demand for farmers just in case we can't get these trade deals a little bit more solidified with China. If we do lose some demand on exports to China, because they are purchasing 70% of their soybeans from Brazil. And of course, not a secret, we've lost market share over the years. But if we can't get any further deals done with China, this additional biofuels demand helps to offset some potential export loss. So that's where the demand sheet is going to be shifting and maneuvering as we head into the ending part of 2025 and approach the new year next year. And by then, we'll know how much China has bought of us or not. And, you know, China, I think they're going to show up to the table when? End of August, right? When we're getting ready for our harvest lows. And usually soybean prices are a little bit cheaper. And I'm sure they're keeping an eye on our weather here in the United States this summer, just to get a feel for if we'll have a big crop or not. And that could be part of their waiting and watching for their negotiating as well. So friendly news without a doubt with biofuels. Let's just keep it going and hopefully we get some trade deals done sooner than later.
On that note, I'll come back to you, Jim, because I do want to talk about China and the potential trade deals there. That nation has been looking to Brazil for more of its soybeans, particularly during the season. However, it's also been for its imports, that is, but it's also not been buying as many soybeans kind of across the board. And it's been pushing its production and changing the way its hog herd is using bean meal and the protein additives. What does it all mean to you about how much it will show up on the world stage?
Well, I think in the, what it's showing you in the world stage and the overarching long term is we've got to find a different use. We're producing beans. We got to find a different use of beans as opposed to selling to China. I mean, the fact of the matter is China is investing billions upon billions of dollars into South America. They just opened that new port here, was it in Chile, or, you know, just a few months ago. The next part of the phase of that deal is going to be putting rail lines from Brazil to that port. They didn't spend that money to build a port just to not use it. So, you know, the reality is we've been losing market share for the last 20 years. It's probably going to continue to lose, Todd. That is why this renewable is so important for American agriculture, because if we're going to continue to lose shares, and then on top of it, like you said, China's trying to figure out a way to use less meal for hogs. And then on top of that, they are starting to use more and more GMO technology. And essentially, we'll start bringing in their national yields for beans and corn, but closer to maybe the U.S. is at. So we've got, like I said, we've got an excess supply potentially building over the next 5-10 years. Renewables, I believe, are going to be the source to, consume those, not just the beans, but also the corn.
So we'll be watching that closely. I will stay with you for just a moment, Jim, and turn your attention back to corn as it's related to Brazil. There are some new consultancy numbers out of Brazil this week that jumped the size of that crop in an extraordinary way. That had to put pressure on the market as well. How will USDA be looking at that going into that WASDE in July and what it means to the marketplace?
Well, it was a monster upward revision compared to what the USDA had in June, compared to what most of the other analysts down in Brazil are saying. Is that accurate? Time will tell. If USDA is, history is any indication, Todd, they will not jump to that number at all. They will creep it up. And there's a very good chance that essentially we're going to agree to disagree to the size of the South American crop compared to what their people are saying and what we're saying. Because if you look historically, they tend not to matter, to match always. But plain and simple, you know, when you look at the corn market, it absolutely weakened this week. There's no doubt about it. Part of it was the good weather we're getting here in the United States. Part of it was definitely farmer, you know, liquidating some positions. And there's no doubt about it. That Brazilian crop definitely put pressure on the market because it is more competition for, you know, on the world market.
Now let's deal with new crop corn sales, those bushels that must go across the scale, particularly those that the producer has not yet priced. How, Naomi, have you been thinking about this as it's related to the fall and the harvest season and getting producers in a position where they might be able to do better than what will be available, or likely to be available based on futures prices right now as they harvest?
Yeah, so looking at the December corn chart and the December seasonal, what did come to fruition was this little mini head and shoulders formation on the daily December corn chart, along with the December corn seasonal that after June 20th, prices have a tendency to tip over lower. So that's exactly what happened. We had encouraged producers to look at potentially buying some puts, either short-dated puts or just regular traditional puts to protect in case that price move lower in the shorter term, because we still have a lot of summer weather to get through and there could be some sort of a bounce higher down the road. But the tricky part is that right now we still have maybe potentially, to Jim's earlier comment, corn might go just a little lower before we have the chance of a recovery bounce. Now, the first week of July, there is a strong tendency. Last year it didn't happen, but there is that strong tendency of a price recovery bounce into 4th of July week. And so just if that should occur, that would be a good place for producers to potentially make some sales for what they know that they're going to have to sell at harvest right off the combine. A recovery bounce would take us back up to 435 on the December board. And that might be as good as it gets for the short term, barring any other surprises from the quarterly stocks. The other tricky thing to navigate is that the funds right now are short probably closer to 200,000 contracts in corn. And a year ago, and in 2020, when they decided to be bullies and just sell this market off throughout the summer timeframe, they got to as much as almost 350,000 contracts short by early August, and prices then went below that $4 value. So I think we have to have a little bit of a defensive mindset yet and hope for something friendly on Monday to give us that recovery bounce. But I just don't know if we're going to get anything that's over the top bullish that's going to just really just take out that 450 major overhead resistance, but we could maybe get that recovery bounce back up to 435.
Jim, if you look at the charts, this year compared to last year, we are where we were last year, about a month earlier than we were last year, maybe a month and a half, depending on whether you're looking at nearby or new crop. How do you view this marketplace and how much lower it could go?
Well, I mean, that's going to kind of depend on what we get the next 2 weeks' weather. It kind of depends on how this quarterly stock report comes in. If it comes in bullish, it might limit the downside. If it comes in bearish and, you know, let's say we find 200 million bushels of corn, you know, then I think you could see it extend maybe as low as 375 into the fall. The thing I'm looking at, Todd, though, in the long run, like Naomi said, I think hopefully we can get a bounce. That bounce probably needs to be sold. But in the ultra long run, I think you're going to put in a low early like last year. And I think we have a shot at having a weird 2 years in a row kind of receding into the fall. And the reason why I say that is a vast majority of the producers are massively under pressure right now. They're, you know, the price of grain, both corn and beans, is below the break evens. The banks we are talking to are hearing phone calls from clients like they haven't heard in the last 10 years about refinancing, trying to get ahead of the curve, very nervous about it. So when I look at what's going to happen, no matter what the size of this crop is, if we do not get a rally, the fact of the matter is we're probably going to lose a lot of acres in 2026. You're probably looking at closer to 90 million acres of corn, maybe even a little bit less, which then means we're going to have to really big yield just to meet that roughly 15 billion bushel demand we're using year in, year out roughly. So I think if you're the Mexican, you know, buyers, they're going to be just like through this past year and be very aggressive buying to put this low in, because plain and simple, we don't get that rally. The farmers don't have the money to plant 95 million acres of corn next year. If they cut it back to 90, it puts us in a very tight balance sheet. If I know that as an end user, just like Naomi said about the Chinese buying the beans, I think they'll be coming in and buying the corn. So I think we will put in an early low in, but you know, near term, if you're stressing about what to do, consider options. Puts where at least to put the floor in, but gives you an opportunity to, in case we do get a surprise. We may get a really, you know, who knows, Todd, maybe President Trump cuts a really good deal with the Chinese on Thursday next week or in 2 weeks, and China commits to buy a lot of U.S. agriculture. We have no clue.
So for both of you and Naomi, I guess I'll have you answer first based on Jim's response there, relating to buying time with refinancing and their loans. Is that something you think they ought to do at this time, or is there another way to set about making that happen in the marketplace?
Well, I would say to always just be aware of the options in front of you and to just be thinking ahead of what could be or could not be. My fear would be that we go into a trough of low prices like we saw from 2014 to 2019 if we end up having big crops here, or if South America next winter has a big crop. So there's always that risk in agriculture. So, I mean, Jim's point is just to stay on top of it, be on your toes, think about what's available out there to you. I know that it's tight in the countryside, and there's maybe more hope that, yes, we get a trade deal done, or we get a next round of Trump bucks to come in and save the farmers. But at the end of the day, you have to not only wear your farmer producer hat, but you have to wear your business hat. So do be mindful of any opportunities that may be out there in the lending community. Of course, be on top of the marketplace as well.
Not yet, Jim. A lot of talk about an MFP-style payment for this coming year. And then within the Big Beautiful Bill, there's still a lot of debate about it itself. It would have an impact on the marketplace. There are things that are related to SEO, ECO, and some conservation functions. However, most of that has to do with SNAP. So as producers look forward, I was thinking about when they have these discussions with their bankers. Their bankers are probably going to say, you know, you've got your crop insurance coverage until you get to the end of month of October. And at that point, the banker may be wanting them, particularly if there's going to be a crop insurance payment, to go ahead and make a sale to fill out the cash market, cash that they need to have available. How might you think about that as it's related to helping them get a higher price later on?
Well, it's a situation. It kind of, like you said, it depends when they're forced to. I mean, you know, if you, you know, a lot of people, it kind of depends where their yields are going to be. You know, I would say like right now, if you can get the rally, a dead cat bounce, 4th of July rally, stocks rally, you hedge it by puts, look for it to go down. If it goes deep enough into it, just like we did last year, maybe an early August, early September low, and it's looking like we're going to bottom out, the Chinese are coming in, then you might actually come in here and actually use options or futures as a way to essentially lock in your insurance. Because the biggest game we're going to be looking at, if prices do break hard into the latter part of summer, do we put an early fall low in? You may have an insurance indemnity payment, but based on the insurance being paid out based on the average price of October, it may be a situation you've actually got to come into the marketplace to buy futures or buy calls as a way to, in essence, defend, you know, of giving back that indemnity the market has given you due to potentially an early fall low.
All right. So what else have we been thinking about? And Naomi, I'll let you take off at this point. Could be if you are a purchaser of these commodity markets, your livestock producer, are there things that they need to be considering at this time?
Well, in general, this is just tremendously cheap value, unexpected compared to where the ending stocks are for old crop. And so for end users, when you look at long-term charts, anytime corn is in that $4 value area, even when you want go back and look at the trough of low prices we had from 2014 to 2019, anytime it was near $4, it would maybe go to $3.75, sometimes $3.50, but it doesn't stay low for too long. So I would really encourage end users to consider, you know, using this as an opportunity to get some of their needs booked between now and even potentially to the end of the year, because in general, the demand is so strong and we still have a lot of weather to get through. So use that as an opportunity to book in these lower values. And talking about livestock, something to be aware of there on the cattle side is that for live cattle and feeder cattle futures, the market has had a really nice correction over the past few weeks. And we're sitting at a point where we're testing the 40-day and 50-day moving averages on these charts. And the past four times this has occurred over the past year, it's been a point where the market will sit at these values for about a week, wait to see how cash news trades, and then has so far resumed the uptrend. So now the question, though, this time is, are we going to have the ability on the livestock market for the cattle to resume an uptrend or not? So we're waiting to see how the cash market fares this week because our holiday demand has been met. And now we're going to see if the packers have any need to do any aggressive buying in the short term here. So keep an eye on the cattle market, the cattle futures, and watching cash inventory this week.
Anything else to add, Jim, on the livestock side or other end users?
Well, the only thing I would say is, like, she went over the market great. I would just, you know, I'm just going to default to, if you can protect profits, you need to do it. I mean, plain and simple, everything looks bullish to it's bearish. There is a lot of uncertainty on these Trump trade deals. There's a lot of uncertainty what it's the impact it's going to have on the economy. And the one thing I always like to point out to people in the beef market I find kind of interesting is, if you watch TV right now, what's McDonald's promoting? They're not promoting hamburger. They're promoting chicken. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was watching one of the basketball NBA finals games, and I was noticing, what was Taco Bell promoting? Chicken nuggets. You know, not tacos, but chicken nuggets. This industry is obviously trying to get people to buy the cheaper protein. I've always viewed the cattle market, the supply is incredibly tight. The question is, when is this consumer going to crack? There was a stat that said something like 75 to 80% of Americans, Todd, are living paycheck to paycheck. Okay, when you think about that, 1 in 3 and 4 people are living paycheck to paycheck. This goes back to the tariffs. The tariffs, if you're tariffing everything coming in from the country at a minimum of 10%, which seems to be the baseline, that pretty much means anything that's coming into Walmart is going to cost you 10% more eventually. And it could be even more than that. How is that person who's already living paycheck to paycheck, 75% of the people in our country are doing that, going to be able to take that essentially 10% tax? They're not. They're going to have to cut spending somewhere, and it tends to be the beef market. And then one other thing you got to remember, loan payments were frozen under President Trump. They continue to be frozen under President Biden. President Trump has, hey, you got to start repaying it. JP Morgan estimates on the low end, it's $3 billion coming out of the economy per month. On the high end, it's $6 billion. And that's money that student loan person maybe gone out to eat, you know, did something in the economy. He can no longer has that income to spend to go out to eat. He's got to pay back his loan to the government, which just goes down hopefully to pay off our debt. So you are really contracting the amount of people that are having to be able to afford this high priced beef. So if I'm a beef producer, I'm a, you know, a pork producer, the markets have been on fire. do not be afraid to lock in those profits.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Naomi Bloom, I'll turn to you from Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Your final thoughts for the day.
Don't be complacent as producers. I know that the pricing on the grain side of things is not overly attractive, but there is some possibility for some volatility next week. And it's going to just be a four-day week with markets closed Friday. So whatever kind of hopefully friendly news we can squeak out of this, or a weather forecast that shifts to hotter and drier, might be an opportunity for the grain markets to have a price recovery, in which case we could use that bounce to make some more cash sales or look at protecting unpriced bushels after that. So just be on your toes. Have fun for your 4th of July holiday week, but don't forget to watch the market.
And Jim McCormick from Barrington, Illinois and agmarket.net.
I'm going to piggyback on what Naomi said, but I'm going to say, you know, don't just watch it. Get your orders working. There's going to be a lot of volatility, and the markets move very, very fast. And you may get it like, look what happened. You know, you'll get the move maybe in the night market that doesn't happen in the day market. Like I said, we have the stocks report on Monday. We have a three-day weekend, which tends to get volatile. Coming out of the weekend, we have the trade deals. You may get leaks in the overnight market about what these trade deals may be. And then lastly, you got that July WASDE report. So hopefully there's some opportunity. Get the orders working, make that decision where you want to pull it. Get the order work with your cash elevator, get it with your broker, and you know, enjoy your 4th of July weekend and hope for a few fireworks to the upside.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand. Anytime you'd like to listen to the whole of the program at willag.org. That's willag.org. And where right now, we'd like you to hit the donate button as we finish up our fiscal year that closes out on June 30, and we need to have everything we will be spending in the next fiscal year, starting July 1, in the bank. Thank you for making that pledge of support to agricultural programming that comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.